The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 4 of the Yoga of Self-Perfection, Chapter 5, The Instruments of the Spirit, page 643. If there is to be an active perfection of our being, the first necessity is a purification of the working of the instruments which it now uses for a music of discords. The being itself, the spirit, the divine reality in man, stands in no need of purification. It is forever pure, not affected by the faults of its instrumentation or the stumblings of mind and heart and body in their work. As the sun, says the Upanishad, is not touched or stained by the faults of the eye of vision. Mind, heart, the soul of vital desire, the life and the body, are the seats of impurity. It is they that must be set right if the working of the spirit is to be a perfect working and not marked by its present greater or less concession to the devious pleasure of the lower nature. What is ordinarily called purity of the being is either a negative whiteness, a freedom from sin gained by a constant inhibition of whatever action, feeling, idea, or will we think to be wrong, or else the highest negative or passive purity, the entire God content in action, the complete stilling of the vibrant mind and the soul of desire, which in quietistic disciplines leads to a supreme peace. For then the spirit appears in all the eternal purity of its immaculate essence. That gained, there would be nothing farther to be enjoyed or done. But here we have the more difficult problem of a total, unabated, even an increased and more powerful action founded on perfect bliss of the being, the purity of the soul's instrumental as well as the spirit's essential nature. Mind, heart, life, body are to do the works of the divine, all the works which they do now, and yet more, but to do them divinely, as now they do not do them. This is the first appearance of the problem before him on which the seeker of perfection has to lay hold. That it is not a negative, prohibitory, passive, or quietistic, but a positive, affirmative, active purity, which is his object. A divine quietism discovers the immaculate eternity of the spirit. A divine kinetism adds to it the right, pure, undeviating action of the soul, mind, and body. Moreover, it is a total purification of all the complex instrumentality in all the parts of each instrument that is demanded of us by the integral perfection. It is not, ultimately, the narrower moral purification of the ethical nature. Ethics deals only with the desire soul and the active outward dynamical part of our being. Its field is confined to character and action. It prohibits and inhibits certain actions, certain desires, impulses, propensities. It inculcates certain qualities in the act, such as truthfulness, love, charity, compassion, chastity. When it has got this done, and assured a base of virtue, the possession of a purified will and blameless habit of action, its work is finished. But the Siddha of the integral perfection has to dwell in a larger plane of the spirit's eternal purity beyond good and evil. By this phrase, it is not meant, as the rash hastily concluding intellect would be prone to imagine, that he will do good and evil indifferently, and declare that to the spirit there is no difference between them, which would be in the plane of individual action an obvious untruth, and might serve to cover a reckless self-indulgence of the imperfect human nature. Neither is it meant that since good and evil are in this world inextricably entangled together, like pain and pleasure, a proposition which, however true at the moment, and plausible as a generalization, need not be true of the human being's greater spiritual evolution. The liberated man will live in the spirit and stand back from the mechanical continued workings of a necessarily imperfect nature. This, however, possible as a stage towards a final cessation of all activity, is evidently not a counsel of active perfection. But it is meant that the Siddha of the active integral perfection will live dynamically in the workings of the transcendent power of the divine spirit as a universal will through the supermind individualized in him for action. His works will therefore be the works of an eternal knowledge, an eternal truth, an eternal might, an eternal love, an eternal ananda. But the truth, knowledge, force, love, delight, will be the whole essential spirit of whatever work he will do, and will not depend on its form. They will determine his action from the spirit within, and the action will not determine the spirit or subject it to a fixed standard or rigid mold of working. He will have no dominant mere habit of character, but only a spiritual being and will, with at the most free and flexible temperamental mold for the action. His life will be a direct stream from the eternal fountains, not a form cut to some temporary human pattern. His perfection will not be a sattvic purity, but a thing uplifted beyond the gunas of nature, a perfection of spiritual knowledge, spiritual power, spiritual delight, unity, and harmony of unity. The outward perfection of his works will be freely shaped as the self-expression of this inner spiritual transcendence and universality. For this change, he must make conscient in him that power of spirit and supermind which is now superconscient to our mentality. But that cannot work in him so long as his present mental, vital, physical being is not liberated from its actual inferior working. This purification is the first necessity. In other words, purification must not be understood in any limited sense of a selection of certain outward kinetic movements, their regulation, the inhibition of other action, or a liberation of certain forms of character or particular mental and moral capacities. These things are secondary signs of our derivative being, not essential powers and first forces. We have to take a wider psychological view of the primary forces of our nature. We have to distinguish the formed parts of our being, find out their basic defect of impurity or wrong action, and correct that, sure that the rest will then come right naturally. We have not to doctor symptoms of impurity, or that only secondarily, as a minor help, but to strike at its roots after a deeper diagnosis. We then find that there are two forms of impurity which are at the root of the whole confusion. One is a defect born of the nature of our past evolution, which has been a nature of separative ignorance. This defect is a radically wrong and ignorant form given to the proper action of each part of our instrumental being. The other impurity is born of the successive process of an evolution, where life emerges in and depends on body, mind emerges in and depends on life in the body, supermind emerges in and lends itself to, instead of governing mind, soul itself is apparent only as a circumstance of the bodily life of the mental being, and veils up the spirit in the lower imperfections. This second defect of our nature is caused by this dependence of the higher on the lower parts. It is an immixture of functions by which the impure working of the lower instrument gets into the characteristic action of the higher function and gives to it an added imperfection of embarrassment, a wrong direction, and confusion. Thus, the proper function of the life, the vital force, is enjoyment and possession, both of them perfectly legitimate, because the spirit created the world for ananda, enjoyment, and possession of the many by the one, of the one by the many, and of the many too by the many. But this is an instance of the first kind of defect. The separative ignorance gives to it the wrong form of desire and craving, which vitiates the whole enjoyment and possession and imposes on it its opposites, want and suffering. Again, because mind is entangled in life from which it evolves, this desire and craving get into the action of the mental will and knowledge. That makes the will a will of craving, a force of desire, instead of a rational will, and a discerning force of intelligent effectuation. And it distorts the judgment and reason so that we judge and reason according to our desires and prepossessions, and not with the disinterested impartiality of a pure judgment and the rectitude of a reason which seeks only to distinguish truth and understand rightly the objects of its workings. That is an example of immixture. These two kinds of defect, wrong form of action and illegitimate mixture of action, are not limited to these signal instances, but belong to each instrument and to each combination of their functionings. They pervade the whole economy of our nature. They are fundamental defects of our lower instrumental nature. And if we can set them right, we shall get our instrumental being into a state of purity, enjoy the clarity of a pure will, a pure heart of emotion, a pure enjoyment of our vitality, a pure body. That will be a preliminary, a human perfection. But it can be made the basis and open out in its effort of self-attainment into the greater, the divine perfection. Mind, life, and body are the three powers of our lower nature. But they cannot be taken quite separately because the life acts as a link and gives its character to body and to a great extent to our mentality. Our body is a living body. The life force mingles in and determines all its functionings. Our mind, too, is largely a mind of life, a mind of physical sensation, only in its higher functions is it normally capable of something more than the workings of a physical mentality subjected to life. We may put it in this ascending order. We have, first, a body, supported by the physical life force, the physical prana, which courses through the whole nervous system and gives its stamp to our corporeal action, so that all is of the character of the action of a living and not an inert mechanical body. Prana and physicality together make the gross body. Stula sarira. This is only the outer instrument, the nervous force of life, acting in the form of body with its gross physical organs. Then there is the inner instrument, antakaranya, the conscious mentality. This inner instrument is divided by the old system into four powers: citta, or basic mental consciousness; manas, the sense mind; buddhi, the intelligence; ahankara, the ego idea. The classification may serve as a starting point, though for a greater practicality we have to make certain farther distinction. This mentality is pervaded by the life force, which becomes here an instrument for psychic consciousness of life and psychic action on life. Every fiber of the sense mind and basic consciousness is shot through with the action of this psychic prana. It is a nervous or vital and physical mentality. Even the buddhi and ego are overpowered by it, although they have the capacity of raising the mind beyond subjection to this vital, nervous, and physical psychology. This combination creates in us the sensational desire soul, which is the chief obstacle to a higher human as well as to the still greater divine perfection. Finally, above our present conscious mentality is a secret supermind, which is the proper means and native seat of that perfection. Pausing here, page 647.